Hey, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the Sons of History podcast. I'm Dustin Bass and Teddy Roosevelt over there on the other end. How are you?
Wow. Bully.
Bully.
Yeah, that was his favorite saying.
Bully for you.
You know, I tell you, I am a big, huge fan of Teddy Roosevelt. I've got like his book on the Rough Riders. I have the Library of America. Somewhere it's like in that direction over there. I didn't feel like going and grabbing it, but yeah, I love this. I love the subject. This is going to be a fun subject. Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be a fun subject. Is that what you call your personal library? The Library of America?
No, the Library of America is the series of books.
I know what it is.
I should give this. What did Thomas Jefferson call his library? I know not what they call it now, the Library of Congress, but the photos,
Library?
I was in Washington, D.C., and I didn't even think to go to the Library of Congress, and the photos that you took were amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And speaking of Thomas Jefferson's library, they had that on exhibit.
Yeah,
like,
I bet.
They had it like in a circle. Uh-huh. Like they had an exhibit of his library that he donated to the Library of Congress. So that was neat to look at. Yeah. Just run through. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't yet, subscribe to us wherever you're listening. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button and the bell button and the like button and the comment button, and then write something nice about this episode, if you don't mind. And if you're only listening on audio, well, you can subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you're listening on the Apple or Spotify podcast, well, then leave us a nice 5-star rating. That'd be nice. It'd be kind. And leave us a good review. That'd be also pretty freaking awesome. And yeah, that's it. I mean, what else do you want? Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are out in Texas and you're not an Astros fan, but you are a Rangers fan, I say congratulations to you. To the Rangers for winning the World Series.
How many games did they play? Was it
five?
Just, they played five games?
Well, it was a 7-game series, but they won it in five.
Yeah, I did not see a single game. I just would, the news would, I didn't watch.
I think I watched one full game, maybe, and then bits and pieces of the end of several other games. But I hardly have a rooting interest when the Astros are out. But I will say this. The Astros and the Rangers were in the ALCS. It went to 7 games. The Diamondbacks and the Phillies were in the NLCS, and that went to 7 games. The Diamondbacks obviously won. The Rangers beat us in 7. The Diamondbacks beat the Phillies in 7. Rangers, Diamondbacks, Rangers win the World Series in 5 games. They had to beat us in 7. So I like to think that the Rangers and the Astros were the top 2 teams in the playoffs.
And we beat the Phillies last year, didn't we?
We did. And I was looking forward to a repeat of that. But, you know, oh well, what do you do? As always, next year. And I think that we now officially have a really good Texas rivalry, which is what I wanted from the beginning when we moved to the AL. Some people here are listening and they have no idea about baseball, but that's okay. I'm catching you up. AL means American League. NL means National League. And we're talking about baseball. So, all right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know, we will let you know now, this is our sixth season. Alan and I have been doing this for 5 years, the podcast, and this is our final season of the podcast.
Don't tell them that. They're going to think we're some kind of losers or something, you know.
Look, man, we're not losers. We're winners.
Seinfeld had 9 seasons, so.
That's true. You've seen the Seinfeld, when Jerry Seinfeld is on who is the guy on 60, not 60 Minutes, CNN? Larry King.
Oh, Larry King. Canceled.
The Larry King interview?
We weren't canceled.
Can somebody get this guy a resume?
Canceled?
Canceled? You don't get canceled if you're number one. Oh, man, that's a good scene.
Well, listen, make sure to tell them why we've decided to...
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's been fun. Look, dude, and I've left open the final episode of this season, and I think we'll probably have just a commemoration. We will hit our 200th episode in a couple of weeks, which is... I mean, come on. Like, that's pretty freaking good. 200 episodes. We've interviewed some fantastic people. We've had a great time. But I think you and I both want to sort of branch out into different arenas. And so you've got plans. We're going to stay under the name of the Sons of History, but we're going to do separate projects. We're going to collaborate on projects. But it's really the podcast that's going to come to an end.
I mean, I know we're still going to have some people that we might want to have discussion. Like, you know, Alan Gaff he's got that book coming out on the, on Robert Rogers. So I know he wants to talk with us. So I know we'll still have some interviews with some people.
We will still do special stuff, but it's just more or less the grind, you know, of the podcast. And you know, it's created a career, at least for me. And so it's been well worth the time and the people that we've gotten to speak with, some of the top historians, not just in the country, but the US and the UK. It's been a lot of fun, but, yeah, the sixth season, 5 years in, We're going to call it a day.
Yeah, we want to change up a little bit. I mean, I know you've criticized me for this. And, you know, I had a discussion with Wesley Odom regarding, you know, his Pensacola book. And, I told him, yeah, I've got all this material. And, you know, I've got material on a lot of videos. And, I mean, I have a lot of videos. And I want to be able to spend some time to put those together. I appreciate you. You're helping me out with... video editing, which is not my expertise, so that's something that I'll be able to work on a little bit. So,
yeah, exactly.
And I want to get some more writing with the Epoch Times.
Yeah, so there's plenty on the plate. So the Sons of History aren't going anywhere. It's just the podcast. So just wanted to let y'all know. Farewell tour begins this episode. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a fantastic conversation. I can already tell. The topic already speaks for itself. It's Theodore Roosevelt, or Roosevelt, as I say. You say Roosevelt, I say Roosevelt. Let's call the whole thing off. You like that? You said that last week. I got it this week. Henry Cabot Lodge. We're going to be talking about their relationship, but we've got a guest on, Lawrence Jerdom. He is an adjunct professor of history at Fairfield University and Fordham College's Lincoln Center campus. His work has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the San Francisco Chronicle. He's the author of Paving the Way for Reagan, the Influence of Conservative Media on U.S. Foreign Policy, and his latest work, The Rough Rider and the Professor, Theodore Roosevelt, Henry Cabot Lodge, and the Friendship That Changed American History. And you know what? 100 years from now, Alan, I think somebody's going to write something pretty similar to that. Dustin Bass, Alan Joaquim, and the Friendship That Changed American History. What do you think?
I think in 100 years, I won't be around. But I would, and you know what? And I don't have any kids. It's not going to do me any good, man. You know, I'm...
Whatever, dude. I mean, I don't have any kids either. And I'm not going to live 100 years from now, you idiot. Anyways, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
But you're probably going to have kids.
Huh?
You're probably going to have kids. I'm going to be worm food, and hopefully, and this is why I'm going to start clinging to religion more often. Hopefully, you know, I'm not already doomed into the everlasting pits of hell, so.
Hopefully not. Well, that was... designed for Satan and his angels.
Yeah, well,
something like that. So hopefully you haven't gone that far.
No, not yet.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we've got Lawrence Jerdom on the line. He has given us permission to call him LJ, which is reminiscent of one of my favorite basketball players when I was a kid, Larry Johnson. LJ. So LJ is on the line. LJ, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. Great to visit with you all. And thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
You're very welcome. We're excited to have you. As is obvious probably to all of our listeners, we're big fans of Teddy Roosevelt, World War One era, Gilded Age, all that jazz, not the jazz age yet. But yeah, it's going to be a fun conversation.
Hi, Dustin, I got to correct you on something. It's Teddy Roosevelt.
Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, right. Was FDR.
Really like to pinpoint that all the time. The difference
I do.
Spelling is the same. You know what? I want Lawrence or LJ to comment on that. Is that true that they said their last names differently?
I do not know.
Exactly. Nobody knows. I think it's something that Alan has made up on his own. God bless him. Well, hey, man, we're going to jump into some of the questions about your book, The Rough Rider and the Professor. This is a very interesting dynamic relationship between Theodore Roosevelt and Henry Cabot Lodge. I was pretty fascinated with just that power dynamic, and yet it was still an authentic friendship. How much of it do you think of their, I guess the authentic relationship between the two had a lot to do with their upbringing? Can you give us some breakdown on their upbringing, the similarities of their upbringing, as well as going into college and getting married?
You know, I think the upbringing had an enormous amount to do with the connectivity which they had. I mean, both men were well-born from the East. Lodge had grown up in the rarefied environment at Beacon Hill in Boston, and Roosevelt had grown up on Gramercy Park, both in very elegant homes with large windows, broad ceilings. They grew up with this patrician sense of duty, which both of their fathers imparted to them. Both men adored their fathers. They lost them each at a very young age. Roosevelt, when he was finishing his freshman year at Harvard, Lodge lost his father when he was about 11. The other interesting similarity was that neither father served in the Civil War, the great conflict of each man's era. T.R.'s father, T.R. Sr., was forced to hire a couple of substitutes because his wife, the beautiful Mittie Bullock Roosevelt, who was a Southern belle, who was very emotionally and physically fragile, was very concerned that her husband would run into a couple of her relatives if he was on the battlefield, and she convinced him not to participate. This was something that the younger Roosevelt never really got over. And in fact, he wrote about this in his autobiography in 1913, the same year Lodge had an autobiography come out of his early life. And Roosevelt said in his book, commenting on his service in the Spanish-American War, you know, I didn't hire someone to serve in battle for me or something to that effect. But both men adored their fathers. They both grew up with this sense of noblesse oblige, the fact that service was important, community service, political service. Both men had tremendous lineages. Lodge had a particularly distinguished pedigree. His family went back to the days before the Revolution, and actually his ancestor, George Cabot, was the first senator from Massachusetts, a very close friend of Alexander Hamilton. And both Lodge and Roosevelt, perhaps more so Lodge than TR even, believed that essentially he was to the manor born, that he was someone who had a destiny to occupy a position of leadership in his nation and in his state. And that was exactly what he would go on to do. Both men loved history. They both loved sports. They both played tennis. They both adored horseback riding. They adored literature. They traveled extensively. They adored living and living well. So there was a great deal in common. They both were initially progressive Republicans, we can say, or liberal Republicans, or radical liberal Republicans, we can say, as they started out. And then, of course, they both attended Harvard, though Lodge was 7 years older than Roosevelt. And I think perhaps their first time they may have even briefly met was at the Porcellian Club, which both men were members of. Roosevelt was a student at Harvard. Lodge was teaching colonial history. He had been one of the first individuals at the college to receive an advanced degree in history. So he literally was a professor, and he taught colonial history when Roosevelt was there. Roosevelt never took his class. And at one point, just to show you how what kind of an academic or teacher Lodge was, he started out with about 14 students that rapidly dropped to six. So, and there were no teaching evaluations in those days. So it's not like, you know, the faculty could say you really have to, you know, kind of improve that classroom demeanor. They then each got married. In fact, they married, Roosevelt married a woman, Alice Lee, who was a distant relation to Cabot. And perhaps they may have met Roosevelt and Lodge at an engagement party that was held for the happy couple in Boston. Lodge marries a woman who was a very, very, very distant relation of his. Her name, she had a Cabot name. Her name was Anna Cabot Davis. Her father was a great military naval veteran who was a close friend of President Lincoln's, ran the Naval Observatory, and she was a great beauty and a great intellect. And it was a wonderful, wonderful marriage, though a very difficult one at times. And TR married Alice Lee. And eventually, the two men would become acquainted again in 1884 when a number of significant things occurred.
Yeah, it's interesting that you end on 1884 because that's where I want to start off. 1884, you know, the choosing the Republican nominee, and you've got Lodge and Roosevelt who wind up supporting James Blaine. And this proved a pretty consequential decision. Why was it that their decision to support Blaine almost ended their political careers? And you can go into where our post 1884 with the death of Alice and then Roosevelt also moving off into the Dakota territories.
Yeah, well, you know, politics is opportunity and moments are everything in politics. And essentially, Roosevelt and Lodge perhaps more so than Roosevelt, was really determined to achieve some kind of political success. And in order to achieve that success, the Republican Party, which both men were members of, was essentially where one had to stake their ground. 1884 was a difficult period. Blaine was a problematic candidate, to say the least. He had been tarred with the Credit Mobiliar scandal, the railroad scandal that really rocked the Gilded Age and essentially implicated several Republican politicians who had taken kickbacks from the railroad barons. And Blaine, who had served as Speaker of the House and was also had been in the Senate, was implicated and involved in this. And Roosevelt and Lodge were two men who still believed in the founder's vision for what a president should be. They very much believed in that old idea of virtue and disinterestedness, integrity, honor, long-term thinking, not taking politics or political positions for economic or personal gain. And they believed that Lodge, that Blaine possessed, you know, was someone who wasn't fit for office because of this scandal that he was involved in, and they were determined not to support him. But you have a couple of problems there. Lodge and Roosevelt were both selected by their respective delegations, Lodge in Massachusetts, Roosevelt in New York, to nominate the president at the convention. They were duty bound to select the individual that the delegates wanted to nominate. They had to go along. They really didn't have any choice. And politically, from Lodge's point of view, if he had chosen to say, Blaine is just not the kind of person I could go along with, I will not support him, his political career would have been gone before it even began. Both men understood that. Roosevelt understood that too. Lodge had imparted to him very early on that, you know, you cannot even consider doing something like that, you know, thumbing your nose at the Republican nominee, because in the end, you essentially then you're on that bridge to nowhere and you can forget about any political career you were considering. So even though they tried to find someone who could be an alternative to James Blaine, they were not successful. They talked to Robert Lincoln and people like that. But Blaine was very, very popular. I mean, he was the great star of that age. I mean, he was a good-looking man. He dressed exquisitely with his long tailcoats and gold buttons and very distinctive white beard. He was a magnificent orator who prepared for every address and could then get up there and recite it completely without even looking at notes. And he was a very dynamic figure, and he was a pretty intelligent man too, but he was also very much a political animal who wanted to be president, had tried to be president a few times before, and was kind of unwilling in a way or apprehensive about doing it again, because A, he didn't want to go down to defeat another time. He also, for whatever it's worth, had been next to President Garfield when Garfield was assassinated at that Washington train station. And it must have been just overwhelming to see the president who you're serving as Secretary of State for to suddenly be assassinated. And he was also, Blaine was also a hypochondriac. He was very insecure. And he was really pushed into running again by these great accolades he would always receive from all of his supporters. So to get back to the Roosevelt and Lodge situation, they were unable to find anybody to topple Blaine from as the Republican standard bearer, and they had no choice but to support him. And that's what they went ahead and did. And this caused Lodge, more so than Roosevelt, I think, an enormous number of problems. A, he lost his congressional bid because he was running for Congress that year. He alienated all of the radical Republicans who lived on Beacon Hill, many of whom he had grown up with, many of whom he and his wife socialized with on a daily basis. And he was ostracized from Boston society. And it was something he never got over. There were very few people that stood by him. Ironically, the man who did stand by him, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., would be repaid by Henry Cabot Lodge when he arranged for him to be placed on the Supreme Court later on, to the chagrin of T.R., who realized years later that he made a mistake. Roosevelt is happy to get out of Chicago after this convention. He had lost his wife and mother that year, and he went off to the Dakota Territory to try to recover from that loss and also from what he believed was the end of his political career after the disaster with James Blaine. But out of that comes this amazing friendship where the two men over time correspond extensively and really buck one another up as two friends would do, kind of always telling one another, you'll be back. And indeed, they do come back over a lengthy period of time.
Well, today, you know, we see Teddy Roosevelt as a larger-than-life figure, and he far outshadows Henry Cabot Lodge. I mean, got books about Roosevelt. He's been in movies. He's been in the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Rough Rider. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know what? They should have his face plastered on the side of a mountain. That's how I feel about Roosevelt. I personally love the guy, but would he have succeeded in politics without Lodge?
I think long term he would have. It would have taken him a lot longer. I mean, TR loved to make that statement. I rose like a rocket. You know, it's a wonderfully eloquent statement, and it is literally true, but Lodge was the man who guided the rocket, and he lit the fuse that allowed Roosevelt to really rise meteorically up the political pyramid in just under 18 years, from a lone assemblyman in New York to the presidency of the United States in 1901. So I do think, based on Roosevelt's personality, that incredible intellect that he had and drive and ambition, he would have been president at some point, but certainly not as quickly without the great network that Lodge had, nor that marvelous strategic thinking that Lodge brought to the game.
Now, I had heard stories that, you know, I don't know if you want to say it's the establishment, but the a lot of people in the Republican Party didn't really care much for Teddy Roosevelt. And to shut him up, and I'm actually going to ask you two questions. I was told that to shut him up, they put him as the VP under McKinley. That way, because back then when you're a VP, you really didn't, as John Adams would say, it's the worst position to have. So was he placed there so that they could shut him up, number one? And number two, was Lodge involved in any of this? Did he help place TR as the VP? What happened on that one?
Yes, Lodge had wanted Roosevelt to be vice president, but this only happened after he had alienated all of the Republican members of the in New York, including the man known as the Easy Boss, Boss Thomas Platt, who had grown to really dislike Roosevelt because of his not only kind of reform attitudes, but the fact that he really did not and refused to kowtow to the political establishment in New York. And at one point, Platt literally said, I want that bastard out of New York. And essentially that, around that time, when Roosevelt came to the realization, Lodge, of course, had realized this far before, that he was not going to be renominated for a second term as governor. Lodge said, you know what, the vice presidency is really the only place for you to be. There was every other time Lodge tried to find something else for Roosevelt to do. It was an opportunity that quickly closed, be it Secretary of War or Governor General of the Philippines or other potential opportunities. These opportunities rapidly dissipated, and Lodge started thinking about the vice presidency many, many months before Roosevelt decided to take it. Initially, he didn't want it. It was not only an awful, as John Adams rightly said, or as later on FDR's vice president said, it was a warm bucket of spit, John Nance Garner, which is a comment I actually prefer more so to than John Adams, because I think there's a bit more of a pungent feeling to that phrase than John Adams. But there were all of these negative reasons why Theodore Roosevelt did not want the position. And Edith Roosevelt really didn't want it. And Roosevelt's sister, who he relied on as well, Bammy Roosevelt, really didn't want it. And in fact, she and Cabot Lodge got into an argument at her house in Washington, and Bammy and Lodge were quite close, and they were very friendly. And Lodge essentially implied that Bammy was out of her head, that she wasn't thinking straight. And she more or less threw him out of her house for saying that. But Lodge, for whatever reason, had kind of almost a sixth sense about him, where from the moment he met TR in 1884, he really did believe, to quote FDR, that Theodore Roosevelt had a rendezvous with destiny, that he had some sort of, there was something that about him that was going to make him one of the great figures in American history. And the presidency was clearly the place that Theodore Roosevelt needed to be. And Lodge was determined to get him there. And when the vice presidential opportunity appeared, eventually Roosevelt accepted it. And it is very, very prescient that soon after Roosevelt accepted it, and he was lamenting to Cabot Lodge, you know, what am I going to do now? There's nothing for me to do here. McKinley doesn't really have any interest in me doing anything, nor does anybody in the administration. Lodge said to him, nobody can know what will happen in 4 years' time. And boy, was he right.
Yeah, well, he becomes president. We know that. Youngest man to become president. Not youngest to be elected. That goes to Kennedy. But youngest to be president.
Yep.
President for 8 years.
Yep.
And Taft then becomes president. And he goes off to Africa.
Yep.
He comes back, 1912. He decides, I don't want Taft to remain as president. He, I see you have a little one there. He decides he wants to run for president.
Say hello, Elliot.
He didn't get the Republican nomination. Hello there.
Sorry, Elliot, I'm in the middle of a... All right, let's keep going.
Oh, yeah, nope.
You know what?
Between my neighbors stomping upstairs and Dustin's neighbors mowing the lawn or his dog, you know, I think our viewers have seen everything. So, but he didn't get the nomination. So he runs as a third-party candidate.
Yes.
Now,
shouldn't he have known that his participation as a third-party candidate was going to guarantee a Wilson victory?
I think he was enraged. He was enraged that the nomination, as he said, had been stolen from him. And his attitude was to destroy the Republican Party, something Henry Cabot Lodge had written a letter to one of his friends about, that he believed that Theodore Roosevelt essentially wanted to destroy the Republican Party, that he was never comfortable in the conservative arena, that he was a progressive at heart, that he would have been a progressive had he been able to be successful on the progressive side of things. But clearly he was not going to be successful. But ultimately, I think Roosevelt was livid. I think he believed that people like Lodge had been responsible for stealing the nomination. In fact, he got up in Boston at one point and alluded to the fact that Lodge was responsible for stealing the nomination. He even said, you have a senator who took part in me losing the nomination. So I think that even though Lodge and Roosevelt would come back together due to their mutual hatred of Woodrow Wilson, I think Theodore Roosevelt really essentially focused on himself first, more so than the Republican Party, which he was never comfortable with, and nobody there ever really liked him, or a lot of the establishment certainly didn't.
You know, had he won, he would have gotten a third term, which was kind of against the rules, as they said. But ironically, the other Roosevelt did win a third term. So those two Roosevelts gave us, what was that, the 21st Amendment or whatever amendment it is?
Right.
That says two and you're done.
Yeah, and that was the primary reason, one of the reasons that the TR said he didn't want to run for a third term, because he really wanted to follow the precedent of George Washington, someone who both he and Lodge really revered. And when he made this announcement, it caught everybody by surprise. Lodge wasn't surprised by it. Edith certainly was. Edith was, you know, a very close confidant, obviously, of her husband, but he didn't talk to her about that. He just got up and said, I will not be running in 4 years' time. Lodge had had little discussions with TR about it. He was actually happy when TR said that he was done after two terms, because he was always concerned that because of Roosevelt's enormous energy and the fact that he would run himself ragged day after day, he was concerned about Roosevelt's health and about actually keeping him alive for a long period of time. So he was very happy when Roosevelt left the White House. Of course, as you mentioned, once Taft comes in, Lodge is desperate to get TR back into the arena.
What's interesting is that he doesn't live a long time anyways, because he visits the Amazon and that practically kills him and ultimately more or less kills him in the short run, if you will. You know, it's I think Lodge was, correct me if I'm, well, two things. I've read that Roosevelt, the moment, like shortly after he made that statement that I'm not going to run for re-election, that he regretted it and wished that he had never said that. Is that correct? Like he hated it?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, he said essentially, I would have given my right hand to have essentially been able to retract or not make that statement. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. Like, and from, I guess, from what you're saying, like to an extent with the way Roosevelt was coming in as the third party candidate, Lodge seemed to be more concerned about preserving the party than preserving Roosevelt's image.
Yes, Lodge was all about protecting the Republican Party, keeping it in the majority. That was really what his role was during Roosevelt's presidency. While Roosevelt moved over and started listening to people like Gifford Pinchot and James R. Garfield, Lodge would be running from Wall Street in New York to State Street in Boston, trying to appease the conservative behemoths in the Republican Party that Roosevelt, as people used to say about President Trump, don't listen to what he says, watch what he does. And Roosevelt would always get up and give these speeches that on the square deal or whatever it happened to be that would terrify people throughout the Republican Party. And Lodge was so connected with everybody in the GOP. And he would constantly hear and receive notes from people worrying, you know, what is this guy doing? You have to get him under control. And they would always, and Lodge would say, don't worry. It's going to be okay. But eventually, it's not okay, because during 1910, TR comes out and goes off on this progressive rant where he talks about direct election of senators, allowing property to be taken through eminent domain, judges being recalled if the public doesn't like their decisions. And Lodge is just, you know, this is just nutty stuff, and I can't support somebody like this. And that was really what led to this break. But I actually think the break had been coming for some time, because Roosevelt, when he became president, really started to move out of Lodge's orbit, both politically and as sort of that mentor that he had had from the beginning.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that's my next question, is because you mentioned how they started off as almost radical liberal Republicans. And as their careers progress, they go pretty different ways. Cabot seems to become more conservative, while Roosevelt seems to be very just moving into the progressive liberal camp, like to the extreme. And I remember reading a number of years ago about how he advanced so far into the progressive camp and the things that he wanted to do. I was like, man, thank goodness he did decide not to, run for a third time right after, right after his second term had ended. It's interesting because you sort of touched on like they've maintained that friendship, but touch on how did they maintain that friendship after they split political camps to the extreme? How did they end up maintaining that, I guess, that friendship, despite the fact that they viewed things very differently politically?
Well, they didn't really. There was a period of time where they really didn't communicate very much. I mean, you have to sort of look back at the beginning of this relationship, really, and up through maybe the first early portion of the presidency, where Lodge was writing TR at times 3 letters a day. Roosevelt was writing Lodge maybe 2, certainly one every couple of days. And then after this disagreement they have during the 1912, that leads to the 1912 primary, they really stop talking. I mean, there is polite conversation. They see one another out at various social functions. They're over at Henry Adams having dinner together. Lodge is very buttoned up about any sort of disagreement that he has with TR. He's not talking about it. He's not bad-mouthing TR among Roosevelt's and his intimates. But once they get on the campaign trail during 1912, it got pretty nasty. To Lodge's credit, during the primary, he informed Roosevelt that the friendship that they had developed over those many years was far too important to allow politics to interfere, and he was going to sit out the 1912 primary. He did not sit out the primary. He did arrange for the Massachusetts primary to go William Howard Taft's way. I don't know if Roosevelt knew about it. I don't know what his reaction was. I was never able to find anything out about that. I wish I had. Edith was livid with Cabot and Elihu Root for basically turning their backs on TR during this really, really difficult period. And even though she, I guess, returned the friendship between Cabot and she returned, I don't know what it was with Root. Root was sort of, you know, really kicked to the curb after that in a lot of different ways. But the friendship was a big deal to Lodge. Was it as big a deal to TR? I think it probably was. Lodge and TR, when they were out on the campaign trail, respectively, Roosevelt on the Bull Moose side of things and Cabot campaigning for Taft, essentially told friends that, you know, I'm really just sick of all of this. Like, people are just tired of listening to Roosevelt complain and go on and on and on. And then, as I said to Alan earlier, Lodge got up and in front of a rally in Boston, I'm sorry, Roosevelt did, and accused Lodge basically of stealing the nomination. And Edith was thrilled when, I think in Massachusetts, there was due to be a Roosevelt rally and there was a Taft rally, and most people went to the Roosevelt rally. She was delighted that, and Lodge, I think, was scheduled to speak at that Taft rally, and she was delighted that there was a larger crowd at her husband's rally. So it got very, very heated during that period.
Interesting. Well, my last question, I don't know, Alan, if you have anything else. Do you have anything, or are you good?
There was something I was going to bring up, but...
Okay, you can, if you think about it, you can ask after my last question. But we are 100-plus years past Roosevelt's last term in office. And it's interesting because Democrats and Republicans often will reference Roosevelt's ability to at least attempt to appease, and often appease, both camps politically. And he's like, this is the guy who reaches across the aisle. And we can look at that and sort of agree to that. But do you think him losing that election in 1912 helped preserve his image?
I do. I don't know how much it helped the Republican Party, because it really knocked the wind out of the progressive wing and really allowed the party to become what it ultimately became during the middle part of the 20th century, where you had all of these Republican presidents and many of the positions that were taken, be it anti-trade or isolationism, are things that really are reflective of the party today. But I do think Roosevelt is a man who essentially got up and said what he believed, and was this authentic person, an authentic politician, is a wonderful, wonderful image. He was not the Machiavellian that Henry Cabot Lodge was, or nor is he the Machiavellian that so many other politicians essentially had to become in order to get elected. I think he was very comfortable with who he was, and obviously did an enormous amount in the 60 years that he was alive. But I think there is so much to Theodore Roosevelt, as Alan had said earlier. I think that's one of the reasons that he so resonates with so many people, because he just did everything. And that's what's so amazing about him. And that's why I think people don't get tired of reading about him.
Wanted to mention one thing, a bit of trivia here. I'm not going to mention any names until the very end, but if you watch the movie The Longest Day, Henry,
Fonda.
Fonda, thank you. I was going to say Henry Ford.
I'm always here for you, man.
Henry Fonda plays a brigadier general with the 4th Division, lands on Utah Beach on D-Day. You know who his father was, don't you?
Theodore Roosevelt.
There you go.
The only two father and sons, that's not true, in fact. I think Doug MacArthur won the Congressional Medal of Honor. But TR Jr. or Theodore Roosevelt, I'm not sure how it went. But so, yeah, he won the Congressional Medal of Honor. And obviously, President Roosevelt won the Congressional Medal of Honor, though belatedly, given by President Clinton in the 1990s. That was one of the things I didn't put in the book, which I found really interesting, was Roosevelt was obsessed with winning that Congressional Medal of Honor. And he drove Lodge completely crazy, writing him repeatedly, begging him to intervene with the War Department to arrange for him to get that award. And Lodge, you know, just got fed up at one point. And one of the problems was, other than Leonard Wood, nobody saw Roosevelt commit any great acts of bravery. So that was the reason that he was not given that award until, you know, however many years later.
Really, I wasn't aware of that one. He had didn't he have another son who died in the First World War?
Quentin.
Okay.
Yeah, was shot down over France.
Yeah, I thought he was a pilot, but I wasn't 100%. I think I read that in Martin Gilbert's book on the First World War. Up there was a passage about that. So yeah, fascinating man. You know, I would say he's in my top five of all favorite presidents. So he's one of the guys that, if I could go back in time, I'd hang out with him in Africa somewhere, drink a beer.
Oh yeah.
Of course, you don't want to drink water in Africa. You get
yeah. LJ, this was fascinating, a lot of fun, great conversation, and great subjects as well. These two gentlemen that really helped shape America. And like Alan said, I don't know if it was off the air, but yeah, put his face on the side of a mountain. Go ahead. Do it. Make it happen. So maybe we could start a petition to do that.
Yeah, it really, he must have been something else. And I encourage, you know, all your listeners, I'm sure some have, but visit Sagamore Hill. It's really a sensational place. It was recently renovated. It really is one of the great spots of living history that one can possibly visit. And it's an amazing place.
Well, listeners, go to Sagamore Hill. Some of you are already up in the Northeast. So, you know, Alan and I got to take a long trip here from Texas. So, hey, LJ, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks and congratulations to the Rangers for their first World Series.
Hey, you know what? We're out here in Houston. Alan's not a fan of the Astros. I'm a big Astros fan. The Rangers beat us in the ALCS. But you know what? As long as the championship stays in Texas, that's fine. We'll take it.
Yeah, I was happy that the Rangers made it to the World Series. So there you go.
Yeah, and that they finally won. You know, a lot of heartbreak about 10 years ago, and they finally got it. They got it done. So congratulations to the Rangers fans. So yeah. All right, man. Well, thanks again, and we will chat with you later.
Thanks. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks again, LJ. Alan, what are you doing?
Oh well. After our discussion about, you know, hell and all that,
You mean our discussion from an hour ago?
Yes.
That really got to you? Unbelievable.
No. All right. No. Loved this discussion with LJ. You know, it's funny that Teddy, I don't know that much about Henry Cabot Lodge. You know, I thought maybe his name was, you know, French, you know, like Henri Cabot Lodge or something, you know, But apparently he had a big influence. He had a lot going on with Teddy Roosevelt. What are you shaking your head for?
He had a big... Not your best work.
About what? About what? The French?
Yeah, the French, yes.
Yeah. Well, I really did not know much about Henry Cabot Lodge. I'd heard his name, but, you know, he's like up there with John Foster Dulles and a bunch of other, you know, three-named people that... kind of have been overshadowed by bigger names, in this case, Teddy Roosevelt. I mean,
Booth.
Teddy Roosevelt Lee was Harvey in the Oswald. Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, you know?
Yeah, you can't get enough of that.
Huh?
You can't get enough of the Indiana Jones.
I love the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And the fact that I was watching, I think it was on the very first episode, he meets T.E. Lawrence, and he's in Africa, and there's Teddy Roosevelt, and yeah, I wanted to kind of, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was someone whose life I wanted to kind of emulate, you know, get real successful at an early age and then go hang out in Africa and do safaris. Although for me, it'd be a photo safari because I wouldn't want to shoot an animal or anything like that. But, But you know, I did enjoy this conversation. I learned a lot. I did not know that, Roosevelt was a fan of getting senators directly elected by the people rather than through the states. That I'm not too fond of because that was something that the founding fathers thought was very important.
Exactly, and it happened nonetheless with 16th, 17th Amendment. I can't remember one of those two. And yeah, I Teddy Roosevelt started hanging around a lot of progressive journalists, muckrakers. And look, the muckrakers were great for a lot of the things that they wound up doing and exposing and all that. Like, that's sort of the golden era of journalism. But at the same time, a lot of them were, you know, they were socialists, so they had beliefs on what... that were opposite of what our founding fathers viewed, which was direct democracy. They wanted more like an absolute direct democracy. And you see it going on today with, you know, trying to undo the Electoral College. So, you know, it's, and who pushes it? It's, you know, people who are, you know, typically progress, like hardcore progressive. So, you know, into socialism, into direct democracy. And, you know, whether they do it for with good intentions or not, it nonetheless was one of the great fears of our founding fathers. Not that we, I don't want to get in on all that, but.
Well, you know what? I wanted to mention this real quick. I don't know if you heard this, but when Kevin McCarthy vacated the speaker position, and both Steve Scalise and Jim Jordan lost the vote, that third guy that they nominated, Emmett or whatever his name was, I think he was from Minnesota, supported getting rid of the Electoral College. So I'm grateful to God that he did not get the speakership position and that it went to, was it Mike Johnson? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Mike Johnson? Yeah. But yeah, when I heard that he was against the Electoral College, I was like, why are they nominating these guys?
Yeah. Was he Democrat or Republican?
No. He's a Republican. It's the Republicans. See, that's Republicans
real
nominated.
A real concern. If that's getting into the Republican camp, then, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. All right. Well, hey, man. A lot of fun with this conversation. Great information.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can find the book wherever books are sold or just get on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, whatever. The Rough Rider and the Professor. It is. I will let you know. It is about the relationship. Lawrence and I were talking about that before we started recording, and it's about the relationship. And I was like, look, you know, you touch on a lot of the big things that are going on at this time, but I said it must have been difficult not to get off track and go down a rabbit trail on, you know, World War One or the assassination of McKinley. You know, that happened. Like, he doesn't go into rabbit trails. He sticks to the relationship between Roosevelt and Lodge. And that was 100% the purpose behind it. And I was like, well, I got that. And he was like, he appreciated my review that I gave the book in the Epoch Times. Cause you know, I understood what his ultimate goal was. But it's a fantastic book, and it's a really encouraging read if you're looking for encouragement in political relationships. Here's a good example. So, yeah, that's all I got, man. I will see your face. I'll see your face later.
Yes.